everybody. Welcome to
Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode two here of the Halftime Review Sports Show. I am your host, Quan, here on the Talk to Me Sports Radio Network. My co-host, Elliot, unfortunately couldn't be here with me tonight. Elliot's out doing something, man. I don't know this guy. It's only episode two. He's already calling out sick, so we gotta have a talk with Elliot and see what's going on, man, because he can't be leaving me out here on the island by myself, so got to get Elliot back on track. No, but he's doing some work with Pro Football Focus. He's probably working on the preseason game tonight with the Panthers and the Texans, so I know he's doing a good job with that. Excited to have him in next week here for me. But I wanted to get into a couple quick topics tonight, and I have three, quick hits that I wanted to hit on before we get some callers in. I know we had a couple callers in last week. I want to kind of up that a little bit and get more people involved. So topics real quick. First, I want to go over Josh Rosen. So some of you who don't know, Josh Rosen is actually the quarterback for UCLA. He's been in the news the last couple of days, interview with Bleacher Report. And a lot of times, unfortunately, with media today, is we get a lot of people who won't read the full article and the headline of, raise the SAT at Alabama and see what type of team they have. But if you dig deeper and you look at the entire interview, even that particular quote, it wasn't necessarily a knock on Alabama. It's more so, showing some of the things that's been going on with the NCAA that we've been talking about for, the past couple of years now. So Josh Rosen, he's, projected to be a first-round quarterback in his upcoming draft this year. So, teams like the Jets maybe. That's looking for a quarterback still, maybe the Browns, maybe looking to bring someone like him in, hoping he has a pretty good season this year. But, with his headline, it isn't accurate to his message. More so what his message was, NCAA athletes, they basically they're working on two full-time jobs. Now, when you look at their sports schedule in addition to their school schedule, it puts them in a little bit of a bind because now, not only do they have to, get all the information, work out, work on their bodies, make sure that they're in optimal condition to be able to play on Saturdays, but they also have the same exact workload that a regular student has. So, when it comes to that word gets thrown around a lot, and I think we're past the point of student athletes. These guys are college athletes that's there for school. When you look at, especially with all of the money that they generate, the big business that college football brings in, the fact that they're not even getting paid and can't get paid, they can't have part-time jobs, things like that. That's a whole, another discussion for another day. But, with his quotes, he was basically just stating the fact that the NCAA, they say that these guys are student athletes, and they kind of hide behind that the amateurism of it all. But in reality, these guys, they're there for big business. And he was essentially saying that, a school like his, like UCLA or a school like Stanford, it's common knowledge that they do have a higher, a higher requirement as far as the academics in order than an Alabama or stuff like that. But when you're in big time programs like that, it essentially becomes a full time job. Now, when we look at other students, that's just in school, they may have a full time job, and we credit them for that. We credit someone that can work a full time job and hold up an entire school load of things to do. But when we look at athletes, it's kind of expected. And if they can't keep up on one end, it's kind of just we're done with them and we move aside a little bit. But the way that the designed is if you want to get to the NFL, you have to go to college. And you have to be 3 years of college. That's just the way the rules are. A lot of these kids, you know, spend a lot of time because they're such great athletes and schools in general, they spend time worrying so much about making sure that the kids are eligible. I'm not sure that they're fully invested in making sure a lot of these kids get, you know, a good education like they say they're looking for. So, you know, just a couple of thoughts on that. He wasn't really throwing shade at Alabama or any other schools. It was more so, you know, taking a look at the NCAA and where they have a full-time school schedule and a full-time sports schedule, whether it's football or basketball. And keeping up with both of those could be tough, especially when, you know, these guys get to big-time programs and throughout their academic careers, they've kind of been pushed through it because they're pretty good football players. Then they get to the NCAA and, you know, they're struggling to stay eligible. So just something to think about. I think he has some really good points, and Josh is a really smart kid. He comes from a pretty, you know, good family. His dad is, I believe, a surgeon. His mom is, you know, a well-respected journalist. So he's also an econ major. I mean, he's a good kid. He's a good quarterback. So I think, you know, some of his comments were taken the wrong way, but, you know, that's kind of where we are now, where you can do a full interview and, you know, one sentence could entice a headline to have you talked about on SportsCenter and radio shows, you know, all week with people trying to decide if you made the right decision on what you said or not. Second thing I wanted to go over here is the whole Kyrie situation. I know ever since he announced the trade, everybody's been back and forth as far as, you know, whose side they're on, who's right, who's wrong in this situation. And I honestly think that the way the media is today, like, we can't handle a situation where no one's in the wrong. LeBron doesn't do anything wrong. Of course LeBron is going to cast a big shadow on the organization. He's possibly the best player in the world. So when you have a player like that, of course management and ownership and the coaches, of course they're going to do everything that they can to make sure that LeBron is, you know, locked in. They get the pieces around LeBron to make sure that he can stay long-term and, you know, get them to contend for championships every year. But in Kyrie's situation, you can't really fault him. You know, you have a guy who signs his extension not knowing that LeBron was coming back. He'd already been in the process of recruiting guys like Jimmy Butler and Courtney York. So when you look at a situation where, you know, LeBron comes back and now, you know, he's bringing in Kevin Love, and then you have to trade Andrew Wiggins, so, you know, someone I think Kyrie would have paired pretty well with their up-and-down style. So, and you bring in a lot of older guys like Shannon Frye, Kyle Korver, Richard Jefferson. So it's not really the way that Kyrie wants to play and likes to play. And I think you've seen a lot of that on the court where Cleveland struggles a lot of times came when Kyrie was on the floor and LeBron wasn't. And that team is built to play around LeBron James. So when LeBron's not on the floor, you know, they tend to struggle a bit just because of the way the roster is built, how they like to play. And for those 10 minutes a game that LeBron sits, it's kind of like, Kyrie, just do what you got to do to keep us in it, and then, you know, we'll bring LeBron back in and figure it out as we go. So that's what it seems like their situation is a lot of times. But Kyrie obviously isn't as good as LeBron, but no one is as good as LeBron. You know what I mean? Like, LeBron James is a transcendent player. He's, you know, one of those athletes that is a once in a generation type talent. So, of course, Kyrie, a 6'2 point guard, isn't going to be LeBron. So I think when people bring up Kyrie's career before LeBron, even though he was 19, 20, 21 years old, to judge him on, even though the team did increase their wins every season before LeBron got back when it was just, you know, a Kyrie-led team, it's just one of those situations where LeBron came back because he liked the way that Kyrie was playing. That was one of the reasons he wanted to come back. Obviously, he wanted to win his championship for Cleveland, but Kyrie was the All-Star MVP the year that LeBron's last year in Miami. So seeing Kyrie play as well as he did definitely gave LeBron more of an incentive to go there. But I can also see a 25-year-old playing under the shadow of LeBron, you know, wanting to test his own limits and see how great he can be, especially when you already have a championship. You kind of want to see, well, you see guys like a Damian Lillard and a John Wall and Steph Curry, you know, in the beginning stages where you have organizations that's fully invested in, you know, them and want, you know, want their opinion on, you know, moves and how they believe the team should be built. So you can see a guy like Kyrie wanting to have that or just have some say, because it's not like the teams that he asked to go to was the Nets and the Orlando Magic and teams like that. He asked to go to some teams that has, you know, some pretty good organizations, stable coaching situations. We're going to exclude the Knicks from those conversations just because they're always in disarray as long as James Dolan is there. So, but when you look at Minnesota now bringing in Tibbs and bringing in Crawford, Jimmy Butler, they're looking like a more stable situation. And then when you look at, obviously, the Spurs and Miami Heat, their organization is first class. So he asked to go to some pretty good teams. So I think the assumption that, you know, Kyrie is selfish or immature or stupid, you know, I think that's kind of jumping the gun a bit. It's just I believe it's a guy that's looking at a situation and saying, okay, LeBron's most likely going to be gone next year, and I'm going to be stuck here with, you know, a coach that I never necessarily wanted to play with a roster that doesn't fit the way that I, you know, like to play. So I'm going to be – then he has 2 years left in Cleveland where he's kind of wasting the beginning years of his prime before he can become a free agent. So I can definitely see why Kyrie would want to get out of that situation, despite the fact that they've been winning for the past 3 years. I mean, they won the championship, they're in the finals the other 2 years. Him and LeBron, they've played great both in the playoffs and the finals. So, you know, they always have a shot, but I can definitely see why, you know, he would want to, you know, start his own situation and kind of get up from under the shadow of LeBron. Last thing I want to get into before we bring some callers in is the show Hard Knocks on HBO. I watch Hard Knocks every year, and I love it because there's just such a realness and the authenticity behind training camp and being able to get behind the scenes and seeing how guys work out, what they do off the field, you know, even going when they're in the coaches' rooms. You got players, you know, that's on the bubble that's going to get cut. You know, they become like sympathetic figures to a point. Obviously, you have the stars of the team where you look at a Jameis Winston, who I think is going to be great this year. You look at a Gerald McCoy. You look at a DeSean Jackson, a Mike Evans, a Quan Alexander. You know, this Buccaneers team is pretty good. They're pretty young also. But I think Jameis is the early star so far of the show, and rightfully so. You know, he's a franchise quarterback. He's probably the biggest personality on the team with, you know, in addition to DeSean Jackson. So I can definitely see him becoming a bigger household name while this show is going on, and him having a good season will just, you know, expand on that as well. But I just love the series. I love everything about it. I think trio of Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, and O.J. Howard, I think they're going to be really good this year. Their offense is going to be good. And you know, something that they said in the clip was Jameis just has to not lose them the game. They have a pretty good defense. They have a pretty good offense. A lot of times in Jameis' career, he's been, you know, a risk taker and a guy that was willing to put it all out there, you know, to will his team to victory. But now that they're kind of a little more well-rounded, he doesn't have to take as many risks. And, you know, I think he'll have a better season, a more efficient season because of that. But one thing I was thinking every year that I watch it, the NBA should really look into trying to get, you know, a Hard Knocks type series. Whether they can find a way to do it on NBA TV or even if they can get it through HBO, I think something like that could really, you know, continue to boost the popularity of the NBA. So, yeah, those are my quick hits, you know, just a couple quick points I wanted to get into before we bring some callers on. So now I'm going to open up the phones a little bit. We have area code 40427. Here. Thank you for calling in to the Halftime Review Sports Show. You're live on air. Who am I speaking to?
Yeah, this is Nas, man. But, player, man, you can't be reading people's numbers off on air, man. Come on now.
I didn't say the ministry. I wanted to make sure you knew.
Yeah, I'm just saying. know, 4-4 is good enough, man. I know my little area. Anyway, man, I'm sitting here listening. It's hard to handle It's hard to handle a radio show, any sports, anything, by yourself. But dude, you were running through those topics really, really good. Good pacing, and you were laying into some good issues with them, man. So I just wanted to give you that respect first, man. Because
thank you, I really appreciate that.
It's difficult, bro. It's difficult. The first thing, Josh Rosen, yeah, he was dead on. It was a good thing he said that, because coming from him, a guy who doesn't have to do that, he could easily put his head down, not say anything, and just, you know, make his windfall when it's time for him to get drafted. But he spoke against the, you know, the raggedy NCAA cartel, as it should be spoken of. If you're supposed to higher institutions of learning, but you're willing to concede all of that in order to make money in using players, In a way that some of them who wouldn't be eligible to be on your campus, you use them anyway, you funnel them into classes that aren't going to really advance them in life or be able to be used by them later on in life, you're not actually giving them an education. You're actually exploiting them for their football talent and throwing them away when they're done. So I think it's really good that he called out the NCAA for what it is. And, you know, what it is a failing of the American education system. You got kids who are talented who spend their time mastering their craft and are being funneled, you know, grade after grade after grade, and then you get to college and you don't have the skills or study habits or abilities to really take advantage of that university, then you didn't really give me anything by having a one-year renewable scholarship. You know what I'm saying? If I give you something that you can't take advantage of, what did I really give you? You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So
I think
I'm glad he called it out.
A big thing with also with the NCAA is, like you alluded to, these guys they spend so much of their academic careers getting funneled through the system to, you know, make sure that they're eligible to play. When they get to these big time universities and, you know, there's a lot of other players that need the same type of help as them, if they're not performing on the field, they kind of just get lost in the shuffle. And for the guys that don't make the NFL, that, you know, if they've been doing that, shuffling them through the system their whole life, and they don't make the NFL after, you know, they enter the draft, whether it's after their third year, after their senior year, then they're kind of like, okay, so what now? So I think that's a lot of issues with the NCAA, and also the fact that the players aren't able to make any type of income while they're playing. I think that's also another big problem with the NCAA as well.
Yeah, because no matter what, I mean, it's at a certain extent sharecropping. And when you get out, if you acquire the skills to be able to do something with it because you had the background to begin with, then, you know, that's all good for you. But is that the majority? Probably not. For the most part, when you get out, if you're not, like, if you don't have the personality to where you can win over alums to where they kind of just love you for either a play on the field or you just have an engaging personality, then you're just like somebody who didn't go to college and you're starting off at square one. And meanwhile, billions are being raked in off of your talent. So, I mean, it doesn't just stop with the coach making money. The AD, the board, you know, the athletic facilities that they build up to recruit more players based off what you contributed. And then they turn around and tell you, well, we paid you with a scholarship. Like Bomani Jones said, well, pay Bob Stoops with classes. Tell Bob Stoops he can take all the classes he wants to instead of getting those millions of dollars. And I'm saying that
right,
when Bob Stoops gone, so I just used him for an example. But, you know, you get the point. We don't tell anybody else that they should take payment in the form of things. You pay people with money. So, you know,
it's a ridiculous setup. Another thing to that is it's not like the sport isn't making money. The NCAA gets a good amount of money. That's a billion-dollar industry when you look at the TV deals, you know, how much the coaches are getting paid. So everybody around them is profiting off of their hard work on the field. So I think it's one of those situations where, you know, they really have to look at that, and I'm not sure if they're, you know, going to look at that. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, you can't ask them to look at themselves. I mean, it has to be outside entities and society saying this is wrong, because they will justify it in any way that they can to continue getting that money. But, I mean, not only does a winning season get you alumni sending in donations, you know, and kind of add to the prestige of your university by being on TV and all the apparel that you sell, and everything else. Just think about what Miami is based on football talent. We wouldn't know what Miami University, the University of Miami was, if it wasn't for those guys who played football there. But now it's known almost globally because of that talent. And this, man, dude, this trickles down all the way to the college town, the local bar, where the servers are fighting over working the game shift because they know they're going to make a lot of tips that day because it's game day. So everybody else is making money except for the talent.
And
that's
all a part of the what they call the Flutie effect. You know, back when Doug Flutie was in Boston College, after he had that play in the bowl game where that Hail Mary was scored, the next semester they had like triple the amount of students apply to their school. So then they're able to, you know, pick some, you know, more upper echelon students and get into, you know, a higher GPA average for the school. It brings in more people to the game. So there's a lot of benefits to what college football brings, and it sucks that the players aren't able to kind of, you know, reap the benefits that everybody else is.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, this is always has to be called out so I get out of it. But, I mean, you're laying out good work on it. So hopefully people explore this a little more and kind of go outside of what they've been told. The Kyrie situation, I think that comes down to I made this shot. I thought I was a part of your inner circle, and you're sitting around acting like maybe you'll resign, and you're not telling me. So I think Kyrie took that as disrespect, which it actually is, because LeBron shouldn't have Kyrie wondering. He should know whether LeBron was going to stay or not. And at that point that LeBron didn't make that step, I think Kyrie as a man just decided, okay, well, if that's the case, I'm going to burn it down. I'm going to go have my own situation elsewhere. Now, sadly, I think Kyrie overestimates how good he is because he's a scoring guard, but he can't run the team. He doesn't defend. Loves to dribble. Not the best and easiest guy to really build a team around or run a team with. And, man, when I saw that list and it said San Antonio, I said, dude, do you know what Popovich would do to that man for all that? He might kill Popovich, all that dribbling instead of the bum. Popovich might have a heart attack trying to coach Kyrie. So that part was funny as hell to me. But I do think he's overestimated how good he is. And playing with LeBron can give you and how far that they were going. It can give you a false representation of how good you are. Because I think if you substitute most of the young, good scoring guards for him, I think you get the same results in Cleveland the last few years because you have King James there.
I just one thing to look at with the way that they are, the Cavs, they're kind of built to play slow. That's not really the way that Kyrie is, like, built to play. He's built more of an up-and-down style. You looked at, you know, when he's been a part of the Olympic team the past, you know, within the past couple of years, and he won MVP on that World Championship team, they were able to get up and down and play fast, and I think that's a situation where he benefits from. Because when you look at, you know, he did average, you know, 25-6 this year, but when you look at his assist percentage, that's something that's indicative of, you know, how many passes and how often he's creating shots for everyone else. He's top five in the league when LeBron isn't on the floor. So the fact that LeBron has to handle the ball so much, it does affect Kyrie's, you know, ability to facilitate and be able to get others involved. But I definitely see where you're coming from with that Kyrie assessment. Maybe he's not as good as LeBron.
I think we're taking sample sizes of, like, outside of the norm, though, when we're doing that. Because just look at him historically. Go back to Duke. What was he? A scoring guard who did not really run an offense or pass the ball and make anybody better. Because, I mean, that's just who he is, man. Remember that?
Yeah,
but as far as, like, running an offense, man, look, there are things Mike Conley knows about timing, where to get people the ball, how to get people going. Like, Kyrie has no idea about it. He's going to either learn on the fly or just take, like, an Iverson direction with his career and just become a, you know, just a high-volume scorer. And look, he's one of the best ball handlers to ever live, so I'm not trying to downplay him. Like,
exactly,
it's like,
exactly.
Period, he's one of the best ball handlers to ever live.
One thing I want to add to that before I let you go is a lot of these point guards now that we're looking at, that's, you know, some of the upper echelon guys, they had their early 20s to be able to, you know, learn on the fly and take some of those early mistakes. And when you look at Kyrie, you know, he had LeBron back when he was 22. So LeBron, you know, kind of masked a lot of the, the natural learning curves that Kyrie would have kind of went through in his early 20s, that a Steph Curry, that a Westbrook, that a John Wall, that a Damian Lillard kind of went through in the maturation process of running a team. So I think he's still young. He's only 25. We just got to give him a little bit of time to get his own situation and see how that plays out.
I hear you, man. I wish we could have this conversation in 10 years so I could be like, yes, he told you I was right. But, yeah, man,
I think that dude is that dude.
And you need to build around him accordingly. You know what I mean? Put a guard there who can run the offense and have him be a scorer. But, yeah, we'll see, though, man.
I'm still around and we can have this conversation more, man. So I appreciate the call. Thanks for calling. I hope you're still listening, man.
Oh, for sure. Good job, man.
All right, thank you. Thank you. All right. I love getting calls like that, man. I like going back and forth. I think a lot of people share that sentiment about Kyrie is that, you know, he's kind of in over his head a little bit with his trade request and wanting to be the guy. But I don't know. I think he'll fare well. And like I said, he hasn't had the time yet to fully go through a lot of those learning curves that the point guards go through in their early 20s. So I think he'll be pretty good. We're going to have a caller, area code 717, the last four in this one, 6090. Thanks for calling the Halftime Review Sports Show. You're on live.
What's up, Kwan, man? This is Kevin, man. First of all, I want to say thank you for coming on, being part of the Talk to Me Sports Radio family. I didn't get a chance to holler at your show last Wednesday. You know, sometimes, you know, I just can't get on because I'm doing some other things. But I figure I'll try to get in today and just say welcome to the family. Anything you need or whatever we can do for you, me and Ray, as far as getting you to the next level with Talk to Sports Radio, we're here for you. I hear you doing this by yourself tonight. It's kind of hard when you're not used to being the guy all the time. Because it keeps you on your toes, but you know what? Though it's really good experience for you because you have to keep an open mind for whatever anybody brings to the table when it comes to sports, and it's really hard because you don't know what the next person is going to call in and ask you. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. You have to be, you know, you just got to keep an open mind. But it's good training for you, though. It's really good training for you, man. But I just want to say welcome to the family. And I think you're going to do well. Ray does a good job with bringing people on. And I think you're a guy that, you know, that's going to be motivated and try to make this thing get to the next level, whatever the next level is with us. So I just want to say congratulations and welcome to the show. Next time, hopefully I get a chance to call in every now and then. I think you're going to do a great job. I think you and your co-hosts are really knowledgeable young guys. Both of you guys are young, but you guys got an old mind. So when it comes to sports, and that's good because you guys let your callers know that you can basically relate to anybody when it comes to certain things that deal with sports, and you don't have too many young guys out there that understands that part of sports. You know, when you have a person, I don't know how old you are, but when you have a person like in the 20s, and you say to them, you know who Michael Jordan is, they say, yeah, he sells sneakers. You know, you got to stop to laugh because I'm like, yo, really, you really don't know who Michael Jordan? He sells sneakers. I'm like, okay, you know what I'm saying? But you're not in that mindset at all. You're not in that mindset.
Right.
But I want to address the issue about Kyrie Irving. I thought when it first went down, the issue was LeBron didn't talk to Kyrie about what he wanted to do, if he wanted to stay, if he wanted to go. And Kyrie felt like, I'm not staying here because you're leaving. Okay.
Right.
So the Cavaliers fans are mad at Kyrie because Kyrie kind of beat LeBron to the punch. LeBron has did this. He did this already to Cleveland once before. So you got fans burning Kyrie's jersey because Kyrie's mad enough to say, "Look, I don't want to be here." But you got fans saying, "Well, if Kyrie stays another year, it's his team." But actually, it's not his team because that team was built around LeBron James. It wasn't built around Kyrie Irving, you know. And exactly. the caller that was for you, Kyrie probably will be a good two guard because he's not. He needs the ball in his hand, and right. he kind of reminds me of a better Rajon Rondo. Because of how much he does dribble. But I don't think Kyrie wants to be the man. I think Kyrie just wants to leave Cleveland because he wants to move on. But the reason why he wants to move on is because it was said that when they lost to Golden State the first year they went to the finals and they lost to Golden State and he was hurt, that LeBron secretly went to Griffin and said, listen, we don't know if this guy can stay healthy. So I want to trade him for Chris Paul. Even back then, Chris Paul wasn't better than him. But
right.
I think Griffin said, in parting gifts, since I can't stay here, this is what I'm going to do. Kyrie, here's a little tidbit of information for you about what's going on with this team. And I think when he found it out that LeBron did that, he's like, yo, I thought we were boys. You know what I'm saying? We don't have to hang out, but I thought we was boys. And so he kind of felt disrespected in a way. And he's like, oh, I'm out of here. You know, but the fans see that. They go ahead.
Yeah, when you look at the Kyrie situation, I think that's definitely a big part of it. Another part of it is you have whenever Cleveland makes a move, what everybody says is, okay, GM LeBron pulled that string when they got Kyle Korver, when they got, you know, when they were able to get JR and Shumpert, having Tristan Thompson get his money, having JR and Shumpert both get their money, bringing in Richard Jefferson and Shannon Frye. Like, those are all LeBron type moves in order to help LeBron and help LeBron win. So when you look at Kyrie, he's like, hey, like, I thought, you know, you guys sold me that I'm going to be the face of the franchise, but you're not involving me in any of the, you know, the front office move as far as where you want to go, because Kyrie didn't sign off on firing David Blatt and that he's supposed to sign off on it. But if you have, you know, one of the top players in the game, I'm sure you would, that's a conversation you would want to have with one of your best players before you pull a string like that. So I think that's another big part of it as well, is where Kyrie is kind of just tired of just being looked at around the organization as the little brother. And when you look at when LeBron left the first time, Kyrie has already had to deal with to build Cleveland up after LeBron leaves. He did it at his rookie year. When he first got there, LeBron was going, he was in charge of being the next savior or the next person to bring Cleveland, you know, up to championship caliber. But when LeBron came back, you know, it's all on LeBron again. And now that LeBron is about to leave, Kyrie is going to be stuck with picking up the pieces again after LeBron goes. So he's kind of always, as long as he's in Cleveland, he's always going to be looked at in LeBron's shadow. And I think that's a big thing that he's kind of just trying to branch away from and, you know, just do his own thing.
Exactly. And like I said earlier, that team was built around LeBron. It wasn't built around Kyrie. You know what I'm saying? Now, Kyrie's not mad because he won a title with LeBron. But at the same token, though, this is the part I understand, but I don't understand, because I think offense puts people in the seats, but defense wins titles. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And when LeBron blocked the shot for on Iguodala, which would have put them up by two or three or whatever the case may be, the last 2 minutes of that game, if you really watch that game for the last 2 minutes, everybody had the deer in the headlight look about trying to make the last shot on both teams. But Kyrie made the three.
Before that point, nobody had scored in about two or three minutes.
Exactly, because the pressure was so much. Nobody had ever been in that type of pressure on both teams, okay?
Exactly.
But Kyrie stepped up and hit that three. You know what I'm saying? So you got to give him credit for that. And if you look at, and I guarantee you, if you go back and look, I guarantee Kyrie probably got more game-winning shots in the last 2 years than LeBron does. I'm critical of LeBron when it comes to that right there, because he's always going to make the correct basketball move, but then You bring Cal Corver in here to shoot a three with 2 seconds left on the clock? No, that's your job. To you're supposed to be the best player on the planet, so you're the one that's supposed to make that shot. You're the one that's supposed to create all of that. Now, when they triple-team you, then you dish it off. You know, and then when they want to compare it to Jordan, I'm like, well, Jordan never played in Game 7 in the finals. But he dished the ball off to players to make shots. I said, but if it was a Game 7, pretty much you can believe that Jordan probably took over the game and the game would have been done. You know, I'm not taking nothing from LeBron James because I think LeBron is probably, when it's all said and done with, because what he did to the NFL, what he did to the NBA, he's going to be in the top five.
Easily. I got LeBron number two after Jordan.
Right, and because of what he can, how he makes teams better. But at the same token, this guy's the most passive aggressive person I've ever met in my life. Just listen to, because sometimes he wants that pity, and then sometimes he wants to be the guy. But you can't. You got to be one or the other. You can't be both. I mean, he was the media for what you needed to be. You know. And I go back to the thing with Draymond Green when they had the whole situation. He was like, well, he should be suspended, this, and whatever. And then when he gets suspended, he said, oh, well, you know, that was left up to the league to take care of this. But you already initiated the thought process.
That was a power move by LeBron to get Draymond
exactly.
suspended. He flexed his muscle to get Draymond suspended, so he would be able to. They would have a better shot to win. I don't know if he did it intentionally, but that was definitely a power move by LeBron.
He did it intentionally. So my whole thing is I'm not mad at Kyrie for what Kyrie's doing. Kyrie did a LeBron 2.0. He's like, yo, you're leaving Cleveland again, and you're gonna leave Cleveland, and you're not getting no trade value. You're not trading for nobody. Nobody's going to, you know, you're leaving as a free agent, so Cleveland doesn't get anything again. So you're going to leave me with a team of guys you brought here that you feel like, oh, I can't win these guys no more, like he did in Miami. And Kyrie's like, yo, I'm going to beat you to the punch.
And he's
just going to bounce. Yeah. So, good talking to you, man. Yeah. I'm going to just listen into the show. You can comment or whatever I got to say, but I'm, you know, like I said again, glad you with the family. Hopefully you'll be here for a long, 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 long time. Man, you got good content. You and your host, he made a comment when we were talking the other day when I was on your show the other time, when you were on the show together, and we talked about the one and done. He brought up Michael Porter, I think his name is. And he's going to be in the NBA. And so when he said that, I was like, yo, he really knows what he's talking about because I know – I invest a lot of time in these players coming in the NBA next year because I'm a Celtics fan and we got the Nets pick and we got the Lakers pick. I'm like, okay, so I'm really interested in seeing who these guys are. So there's like five or six guys that could go one through five, and these are big guys. So when he said that, I said, yo, I told Ray, these guys are gonna be good. They're gonna be real good, but. I appreciate you taking my call, man. I'm going to sit back and listen to the rest of the show if I can.
Kevin, I want to just thank you and Ray for everything you guys have been helping me to, over the past couple of weeks. I think I've talked to you guys probably every day since we made the announcement that I was going to get my own show. But it's definitely been pretty good. I'm loving the experience so far, and I just want to thank you guys for helping me out with everything. So thanks for calling in. Hopefully we'll get you. Next week, all right, Kev?
All right, brother. Take care.
All right. Take care. All right. Now we got another caller here. We're going to go to area code 717. Last four is 2137. Thanks for calling in to the Halftime Review Sports Show. You're on live. Who am I speaking with?
Kevin, what's going on? Raymond Bennett here. I see that Kevin Dixon ran off before I had a chance to talk to him and beat him down. You know, I come with Kevin
Dixon. He beat you to the punch.
Right? He's afraid of me. Huh?
Kevin beat you to the punch this week.
Yeah, but he's running for me. He hung up real quick because he knows my verbal skills are ambidextrous. I hit him with the left and the right. But you're doing a good job, and that needless to say. We talked about it. A couple of real quick comments. About about LeBron, Kyrie. So unfortunate situation. You know, when you look back at the history of players who are unable to work it out for whatever reason, you know, you go back to Shaq, Kobe, Kevin Garnett, Stephon Marbury. It's been like that for a number of times, and it's unfortunate because of the fact that you sit back and scratch your head and think of all the things that could have, might have been, you know. But it's a business. It's a business decision. And I think as great as he is, it's very difficult to play with LeBron. He commands the ball a tremendous amount of time. He's considered a point forward. So he likes to dribble the ball and pound the ball. That way he's dictating the situation, and Kyrie does the same thing. I think the problem where the team went wrong, and I've said it over and over again, is the fact that LeBron prefers to have athletes with him. And I think that, you know, I think the trade for Kevin Love did not go well with them, because if you could only imagine a young Kyrie with Wiggins and LeBron, that's a tremendous amount of pressure on you on the offense thing. And I don't think that Kevin Love fits that type of that mold. The beautiful thing about LeBron is LeBron gets his people paid. You know, Christian Thompson.
Oh, yeah, all those boys. Yeah,
Smith. All, you know, I like to be LeBron's boy because you're going to get paid. He's going to make sure that you're going to get paid. And after that,
and
he's going to leave you. But
aside from his boys on the court, all of his boys off the court are getting paid, too.
The old additive from The Godfather, Simon Hyman Roth, he makes sure everybody gets paid. So all his boys are going to get paid. Now, he's going to leave you. He's going to leave you in Cleveland stuck. But you know, you'll be happy. So all those guys, J.R. Smith and Shumpert and Christian Thompson and Shannon Fry and all this. Listen, it's a last hurrah for him in Cleveland. He looks out. He looks out onto the landscape. And I think, I think it's a grave mistake if he thinks he's going to go out to the West and automatically he's going to excel that team, the Lakers or whomever, beating Golden State. Golden State has a very unique thing, and everybody doesn't really talk about it. Is they talk about how much they score on offense, but they are tremendous on defense because of the fact that one of the things that they have,
I said, that's one thing that a lot of people don't want to talk about. They talk about the firepower, but the ability, their defensive versatility, that's what actually propels them to that next level.
Yeah, they have young players who are between six. I mean, I think Stephen Curry is the shortest, maybe 6'3". But they play the passing wells real well. They get out on the break, and they put a tremendous amount of pressure on you, and they're finishers. Either they could drive to the hoop and finish, or they shoot a three-pointer, and they come at you in waves. You know, when you have guys like Livingston and Iguodala coming off the bench with JaVale McGee and David West and all those guys, and you have that starting front four, five that you have, Draymond, KD, Clay, Stephon. I mean, it's just you know, sometimes when a team goes to their bench, you'd be like, okay, oof, I can catch my breath. Those guys come in droves and they keep coming. Yeah, they keep coming. So it's I don't see anybody beating them. You'll see. It's just me. If I'm a player and I really want to win, and I'm just looking onto the landscape, a guy like LeBron doesn't need any money. Just imagine this. Just close your eyes and dream.
Okay, let's see where this is going.
Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday, Rajon Rondo, LeBron James.
Now, that's interesting. The only thing that would be an issue is LeBron likes to play with guys that can shoot, so I don't know how his fit next to Rondo would be because they both like the ball in their hands. But putting LeBron around Boogie and Ant Davis is just borderline, like, unfair.
I step back. That's the only team. But then with that type of squad, you have True shooting the jump shot. Boogie could shoot outside. Anthony Davis could shoot outside. I mean, everybody was shooting there except maybe Rondo. But that's the only – it's going to take something like that, magnanimous like that, to push back. LeBron would have to take less money, which he probably could because he's making a ton of money off the court. But that's the only that's the only formidable team that I can see. Even if LeBron goes to L.A. next year and it has Ingram and and ball, and let's say they get.
If he goes to LA, I still think they're a year or two away, and I don't think LeBron has those years to waste. And coming in his last, you know, the end of his prime, I think he's trying to get as many finals appearances and championships that he can now. So going to LA, I did it for the business reasons, but for basketball reasons, that sets him back about a year or two.
Yeah. And so, and to me, that's the only other, because look, there with a front court of Boogie, Anthony Davis, and LeBron, that puts a tremendous amount of pressure on people.
I don't see how
Golden State would be able to stop something like that, because those guys would eat you on the boards, and they could all get out and run. You imagine LeBron, Shrew, Holiday, and Anthony Davis running?
Yeah, that's dangerous. And then Boogie trailing. So,
yep.
That's a dangerous. Now let me ask you this though. What do you think about, let's exclude LeBron from this. Let's say LeBron decides to stay in the East. What do you see a trio of Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Boogie Cousins? How do you see that trio faring in the West?
I'm
not too interested in that.
To be quite honest, I'm not a Paul George fan. I think he's outside of the top 30 ball players. I think when you play with a team like the Pacers and they're not really going anywhere, spinny shots, you take over. You want to rah-rah the team, but you got to be a guy to say, come on, let's go. So I don't see, you know, everybody talks about him like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I just don't see that in him. You know, I see him as a guy who's, you know, who's maybe, I see him more along the lines of a Chris Bosh, the third banana in the boat, other than the second guy that's going to, you know, going to push you over the top.
I think that Paul George is actually a really good second guy. I don't think he's a good first guy. So with Westbrook having the personality, and then if you bring in a Boogie Cousins who's probably overall more talented, I would say, than Paul George, if you just look at their size and their skill set. Paul George is, I think he's a really good, like, second guy that would be good in that situation. Even if DeMarcus is more talented, he would focus more as a third option in that scenario. But I think a trio of those three could be really good in the Western Conference.
Going up again, Golden State, those guys won't beat Golden State.
Oh, no, but nobody's beating Golden State. So everything has to go to State is just hypothetical there. No one's beating Golden State at all.
But I think the team that I just put together will be a chance to beat Golden State.
Well, yeah, but then we just have the issue of trying to get LeBron to go to New Orleans. So that's the only thing that's holding that up.
Yeah, but here's the thing. LeBron has made so much money. Does he really need to make another $3 million? He could take less. He could take less because here's the thing. When you look at guys like LeBron and Kevin Durant and Westbrook and Harden, they've made a boatload of money with their sneaky contracts and outside endorsements. So at the end of the day, they really don't need to have, you know, it depends on what you want to do. You want to win championships, or do you want money? You know,
next year's free agency class is going to be some big names out there. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where the landscape. I think Golden State, Kevin Durant going to Golden State has probably made this offseason way more exciting than offseasons in the past have been, because now you see teams actively trying to get 3 and 4 star player teams now, and it's benefiting us as the casual fans, because now we get to spend an entire summer now just wondering how all of these teams are going to play well together, who's going to get moved next, what's going on. So I definitely think if the Kevin Durant thing did bring one positive, now the off seasons are a lot more fun.
Yeah, and then there's always that situation in New York, which is just comical at best. You know,
as long as Dole's in there, there's going to be a black cloud over the Garden.
Oh, my God. Like I told people, I made a joke. I said to people, What happened was Charles Oakley, as part of his condition, he was banned from the Knicks from attending the Garden for 1 year. Meanwhile, down in Baltimore, Carmelo Anthony screamed out, "Can I get that deal?" Carmelo would love to be banned for the Knicks for a year. It's an unfortunate situation. He's stuck there in that thing they call Madison Square Garden. One of the things that I do like what the Knicks are doing is that they brought in a lot of players, a lot of coaches and administrators, people who have a concept of an idea of what basketball is all about. So it's definitely going to be the unfortunate thing about New York City is that it's not a place where people believe in rebuilding. They'll say that they want to rebuild, but then after a year or so, they'll be like, "Oh, you got to expedite the process." So I said, "I don't want to eat up much of your time because it's your show. And it's just, I was just calling in to do some exchange. I wanted to see if I could get Kevin Dixon, but I know he was going to run because he knew I was coming."
We gotta try to set that up for another week, that showdown between you and Kevin. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. All right. Pleasure's all mine. All right, have a good show and have a good take care.
All right. Okay, so we got a couple, 8 minutes left, so I think we have time for another couple callers. I'm going to go to area code 973. Thanks for calling the Halftime Review Sports Show. You're live. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking with Lou from your neck of the woods, actually, in Jersey.
Hey, Lou, what's going on, man?
Yeah. 30 minutes on a good day, on a bad day, though, from where you are, forget it.
Just give me an idea.
All right, you know, I want to make a comment on that UCLA quarterback that said that school and football don't go together. I know you touched on it earlier, but I want to add a little bit to it. I don't really believe in that. I mean, because, you know, there's always been controversy about student-athletes, you know, whether they what their active role is in playing, like, and should they get paid or not. Well, I don't think they go that far, but I do think that there is a balance that needs to be between, you know, student athletics and their studies. I mean, like he said that there's no room for it. I don't believe that. I think it's all just a matter of balance that comes with it. You have to remember that you are a student first, you know, to go for your degree and what you're trying to work for. But I don't see anything wrong with them being, you know, a student as well as a player in football, basketball, or even maybe kayaking for all we really care. The whole thing is, you get the idea, though.
Yeah. Now there is
there has to be a line that's drawn between your studies and your athletics. But I don't think that you have to rule, you know, your athleticism out just because you go to school. I mean, you know, because some people who don't even do athletes, you know, they work, you know, when they don't go to school, but they manage to balance it out. So I don't think there's any reason for it, and there's no harm in it either. They can build your character up.
I think the one issue, though, is that their schedules kind of take them away from school a lot, whether it's travel, whether it's, you know, they have to be at practice and meeting at certain times in a day, so it kind of restricts what kind of classes they can take to a certain extent. So I think when it comes to the student athlete, it's we can say that they have to put school first, but sometimes their schedules, when you go to an Alabama, when you go to a Kentucky, when you go to Ohio State, sometimes your schedule can kind of keep you from just focusing on school first and football second.
It does present a problem, but it's been that way for years. You know, I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, I personally don't know how they handle it themselves. I mean, you know, you're an athlete and you know, when you travel on the road for away games, and like, how do you, your studies, I mean, you know, I got to get a credit for that, though, trying to balance it all in a given week. I mean, I didn't say it was easy.
But, you know,
considering that, you know, they do well on the field, but also they do well off the field, and it doesn't really affect some of these players because they can still manage their grade point average. So, obviously, they're not stupid. You know, they're doing something right.
Yeah, I think a lot of times with athletes, I know certain athletes, guys, I don't know if you're familiar, but there's a show on Netflix called Last Chance U. A lot of times you see guys.
I've heard of it, but I don't have Netflix, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, so a lot of times you see guys, you know, that in situations where
you know, football is either the only thing that they want to do, or they're kind of in a situation where they feel like football is the only thing that can get them out of their situation. So school comes second.
Uh-huh.
So I think one part is we do have to change that mindset with a lot of our student athletes. But also,
yes,
I think the schools can do a little better job with those guys leading up to getting in the NCAA, where they're not just being, you know, pushed through and making sure that they can stay eligible just to get on the field.
Yeah, I because I'm sure that they do struggle at some point. You know, like you're in class,
mm-hmm,
saying for like in North Carolina on Tuesday, and then you have to go to like University of Minnesota on Thursday. You know, like, you know, it does take a toll on them. I guess so. That was an example only. I'm not saying it was accurate, just an example.
No, yeah, I completely understand. So now, what,
you know, I mean, if it was me, I don't know if I'd be able to handle it.
Now, let me get your thoughts real quick. I know we got a couple minutes left. What do you think about this, the Kyrie LeBron situation? Where do you see Kyrie going? I don't want to say whose side you're on, because I don't think none of them necessarily wrong, but, you know, what's your thoughts on that whole situation?
Is there anyone on Pluto? No. I think the whole thing is just a bunch of – I think Kyrie's just being jealous. You know, I mean, I think they're both wrong. Kyrie's jealous, and LeBron is nothing more than an oversized egomaniac. So I think they're both wrong, and I think this is going to blow over, and they're going to both stay right where they are. Oh, and LeBron leaving for L.A., I got three words for you. Not going to happen. He made Cleveland
a
championship team, and
I don't
think he's going to bolt out now late in his career. No. Put the rumors to rest. It is not going to happen.
Yeah, I can see maybe L.A., you know, after his prime, but I think right now, one, it doesn't make sense to go to the West, looking at all of the superstars that's in the West. He can stay and dominate in the East. And two, you know, he would be joining the team unless that they can acquire other star players. He would be joining a team where, you know, they're kind of like, 2 or 3 years away from actually hitting, you know, where we expect them to be. So I think that's a tricky situation.
Oh, I want to make one. Speaking of that,
mm-hmm,
Mark Cuban made a comment a few weeks ago saying that, now this was a joke that I think, unless there's any real accurate proof to it, that he would rather see his team move to the East because he thinks the West is too strong and thinks that Dallas doesn't have a prayer in the West to win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if he meant that seriously, or I mean, the press that was taking it as a joke. I mean,
right.
You find anything relevant to that?
I mean,
Mark Cuban's an idiot.
I'm sure it was a joke because, you know, Dallas is very successful in the West. The past couple years now that Dirk is getting a little older and they've missed on some big name free agents, haven't had the success, but I think. It's just more, you know, Cuban is more of a lighthearted guy anyway, so I'm not sure if he's actually being serious about that, but he may be trying to plant some seeds for a little realignment in the playoffs or something along those lines, because, you know, a guy like Cuban, he's always looking ahead a little bit. So
he's got to keep out West to keep up with his other projects, like that Shark Tank stuff.
Ugh. Right. he's got a lot of stuff going on, so. It's always interesting when he talks about something, because he's usually alluding to something that, you know, we can possibly see in the future. But thanks for calling in.
Well,
tonight,
let's
man.
See. You got three things that's got a very heady schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Cuban,
yes,
Steve Harvey, and myself. Because with the stuff I do on here, it's a lot.
You're a busy man. But thanks for calling in. I appreciate the call.
You
hopefully
got
we'll catch you in next week.
Thanks.
No problem. All right, thanks again, everybody, for listening to the Halftime Review Sports Show. Just want to thank you guys for calling in. Hopefully we'll see you guys next week. Enjoy the rest of your night.